long before you could shoot pictures in courtrooms in Illinois, you were able to shoot pictures in courtrooms in Ohio.
My goal as a photojournalist is to try and create an image of a place that 1,000 people have seen, but hopefully they see it in a new light.
I was leaving the building, the Tribune Tower, one day, and I saw that rotating drum door in a dark room. It's like a way to keep a dark room dark.
Part of it is practicing, getting your eye practiced enough to see subtle differences, but it can make a huge difference in the photo.
Every landmark, if you're at the Bean, or if you're at, you know, somewhere in Barcelona at La Sagrada Familia.
We are so dependent on just the goodwill of people. They believe not only in what I'm doing, right, but also the power of story.
It's 706 720 WGN. Thank you for joining us. It's Andrea Darlis. It's Andrea and the reporters. We are back tonight. White Sox baseball is no more, at least for this season. We'll be back in better than ever, hopefully, next year. That was Will Byington, Alex Garcia, and Nancy Stone, our panel on photojournalists we did 2 weeks ago. Tonight, we feature three award-winning and groundbreaking journalists. They are Barb Markoff, an award-winning reporter and producer who's been an investigative journalist for ABC7 for 20 years and part of the I-Team for 11. She worked at ABC in New York before coming home to Chicago, where she's covered corruption trials, uncovered unethical government employees, and crime issues around Chicago, and has covered the Iraqi War with Chuck Gowdy. Barb, welcome. Thanks for being here tonight.
Thanks for having me.
John Owens, a multimedia journalist who literally launched the Chicago Tribune's video department. He's worked for City News, Fox News, works on Through the Decades with Bill Curtis on the Decades Network, and Collector's Call on MeTV. He's also the president of the National Academy of TV Arts and Sciences Midwest Chapter. John, welcome.
Vice president.
Oh, okay.
Steve Novak
elevated
would be
you.
Very upset.
Oh, I elevated you. Still trying to get that Emmy, John.
Uh-huh.
Still trying.
Uh-huh.
And Mary Vandeveld, of course, you know her name. You hear her every morning on 720 WGN, a member of the prestigious WGN Radio Walk of Fame, a news and morning traffic reporter at WGN for 21 years. She's also worked for the Illinois News Network, WTMX, WSCR, and WMAQ, as well as a news director in Madison and the Quad Cities. Mary!
Hi!
I'm seeing you at nighttime now.
This is so weird.
This is great, and I love you.
12 hours ago.
I was going to say, I love you for coming in, and you said, can I do it on the phone? I said, no.
Oh,
you got to come in.
I tried.
This is like family reunion. Barb and I went to school together. John and I used to... I literally say he started the video department at the Tribune because there would be a reporter working on a story. He would record the interview on a VHS tape, run it down to our newsroom, and lo and behold, that's how we started, you know, basically interviewing reporters.
That's right. Technology in 1998.
I know. You got to bring up the year, right?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Back at the tower.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for being here. As I told you all, we started this earlier in January and started out talking like news of the day, and it really became a show about reporters, and people just want to know about you and your background and how you got into this field. And I was at an INBA conference/convention over the weekend, and students had so many questions on how much has changed, and is it better now? Is it worse now? Is it harder? Is it easier? So we'll delve into all of it. But
don't they ask how much money you're going to make? Like
no, I did tell them at one point. Yeah, first gig was what, 16 grand? Actually, no, the first gig was at WPGU in Champaign, $5 a shift.
Yep, $5 a newscast was
five.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
mine might have been less because I'm older.
Right, pre-tax. Right,
my first full-time gig with City News Bureau, I made $14,500 a year.
Oh, that's more than me. I made 12,000 a year.
Ooh.
That's more than me. I made 10 in Northern Wisconsin.
I know. This is like a joke amongst journalists and reporters. We always talk about first salaries, first jobs. What was your first job, Mary?
My first official job was in Northern Wisconsin.
And what were you doing?
WBWA. I was the news director at 23 years old. Very, very scary. But you know, I was in the middle of nowhere, but it was a state-of-the-art radio station. It was owned by the anesthesiologist who worked on Reagan when he was shot.
Oh,
yes,
my God.
Yes. And this guy was his hobby. Radio was his hobby. He bought this radio station in Washburn, Wisconsin, and it was state-of-the-art stuff. And I interviewed and drove 8 hours, and that was my first job.
Do you remember your first story?
No, it was, I think it was Indian reservation related, probably, because there were a lot of reservations up there, and I would demolish the names.
Oh, yeah.
Shawamigan and
Manitowoc
and Nemacogin and Abagamon, and oh, boy. First week, they're like, who is this chick from Chicago?
Right.
Get her out of here.
Get her out of here, right? Learn the names of our towns. Oh, God. Barb, first job. Do you remember it? And our first stories?
WCTV in Tallahassee, Florida. I went sight unseen. You know, it took a few months after college to get the job, and the news director offered me a job, and my parents thought I was crazy to move down there, and but it was fabulous. It was a family-owned station. They had all the bells and whistles. It was a capital. It was a college town. So it was actually a great place to be as a young journalist. I learned a ton. They let me do everything. I think I ran cameras, edited, started producing, worked on the assignment desk, reported a couple days a week. So
kind of what you do now, basically. Producing, writing, reporting. Right. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a great place to start. And I tell students all the time, be willing to go to a small market. That's where you learn the most. You can make mistakes there and you're not going to get fired.
Yeah.
So yeah, I had a wonderful experience.
John, how about you? First gig?
My first gig was actually with the Tribune. It was in 1987. It was a part-time job in the sports department. I was an editorial assistant in the sports department and would collect information on high school games, high school football games, and high school basketball games, and do what they called coding agate. So that means making sure that all the racetrack the races were aligned properly and the box scores were aligned properly. And I think I finally got to cover a sporting event in, you know, maybe 6 months afterwards, some high school sports event where I had to collect my own stats.
Right.
Being a high school sports reporter is the most difficult job in the world because there's no PR person handing you stats. You have to collect all your own stats.
Oh, sure.
During the game. So, and if you screw it up, then you're lost.
And how about pronouncing names? I always baffle at that, how the sportscasters know. Especially in high school. I mean, you have to find out yourself. You don't have someone handing you, like Dave Enick gets everything handed to him, right, Mary? I mean, he's got how many people working for him?
Oh, at least three.
At least three. You know, you're doing everything yourself.
Luckily with me, it was print, so I didn't have to worry about pronouncing.
Oh, see, that's good. Were you always, so your first gig was print, and you kind of stayed that way until multimedia?
Yeah, you know, I didn't have a straight line in my career, so I was a film major in college and a broadcast major in college, but I also, you know, reported for my college newspaper, which was a great newspaper called the Daily Free Press, and all these great journalists like Don Van Natta, who's with ESPN now, and Ian Fisher, who's one of the lead editors at the New York Times. They worked there, and I was inspired by that. So I kind of had a foot in both worlds from the beginning. And after a part-time gig at the Tribune, I landed a full-time gig at City News, the job that I was just talking about, and did that for 2 years. And then out of that, I worked at Fox News Chicago in its early days.
Okay.
When Greg Caputo was the news director.
See, in this whole business. And then he went and went to Channel 9.
That's
hired
right.
me at Channel 9
That's
in
right.
2012.
That's right.
Doing freelancing.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Did you all always know you wanted to either be a reporter, journalism, you know, some sort of in the journalism realm growing up or as kids? Or did you could just completely make an about face?
I mean, I knew I liked to write. I knew that I liked change all of the time, and I was nosy, and so I think it just seemed like a natural fit. I think it's pretty rare these days for kids to go to college and then end up staying in their major, which I actually did. But I kind of think that that was something that was kind of always in my blood.
You too, Mary? Did you always know?
No.
No?
I just always like a teacher. I wanted to be a history teacher.
Well, you came from a big family, too.
Yeah. And, you know, my mom didn't really, my parents just, you know, whatever you want to do and didn't really steer me anywhere. But I just talked all the time. I remember that. And my family's like, gee, she never shut up. But, I used to play a game, Beauty Shop, by myself in like the corner and just talk and have conversations about things. And
you'd be all the characters, like the Eddie Murphy kind of being all the characters.
It was very odd. And then, and I like to write as well. And it just kind of melded together, I guess. And reporting was never really there. That wasn't a thought. But until, my father was in the traffic business. My father was
in... I remember this because at your dad's wake, there was there were traffic cones up as you filed in by the procession. And not because there were so many people there, but that was his business.
In the traffic safety business. He was one of the original traffic safety companies in Illinois and started in 1959, building barricades and type threes, which are the big, long, gated ones, the cones and everything. And so I was already in the business more or less, and I worked there every summer. You know, I dispatched the drivers and got them lost. Pretty good for a traffic reporter. Yeah. Right. Like, she's going to be a traffic reporter? Whoa.
Oh, so you came full circle, basically.
Yeah, yeah. It was weird. I kind of just all meshed together.
It always does. Yeah. Things always kind of fall into place. It's Mary Vandevelde, John Owens, and Barb Markoff. It's Andrea and the Reporters. More with these three award-winning journalists after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back to the program. It's Andrea and the Reporters, John Owens, Barb Markoff, and Mary Vandevelde, my guest tonight on the program. We're talking about very exciting things. I said you guys have to save this for the air. Barb, I have to ask you, in your bio, it says in 2003 you covered the Iraqi war with Chuck Gowdy. You've been on the I-team now for 11 years?
Yes, but I worked with Chuck before when I wasn't completely just doing investigations.
Okay, so tell us your path, because this is really cool. You were there, and then you went to New York, and then came back.
Yes, so I had been working, I think, at ABC for... 6 years or so before I went to New York. But there was an opportunity to, unfortunately, it looked like the U.S. was going to war, and they were sending folks to go to hostile environment training so that you could be sent overseas. And so we went for a week, and you learned all sorts of things that, thankfully, I didn't have to use, but, how to use a gas mask, how to get in and out of a hazmat suit, how to treat gaping wounds and find your way through hills in Southern California. I'll never forgive Chuck because we were, in some role playing and I was being held hostage and he didn't think to offer them money for me.
Oh, no.
I was kidnapped and we lost that
oh,
round.
No. But,
We did that. And then soon after we left and we went to Kuwait. And I think we were gone a total of 6 weeks, 4 in Kuwait and then 2 in Qatar. And what was amazing about that experience was to be able to connect with the Chicago area soldiers who were out there. And so we would drive up the 2-lane highway to Iraq, and then you would turn off. And, lo and behold, there would be this huge military city. And we had connections that, hooked us up with folks who were serving from the Chicago area. And we did great kind of town halls where Chuck would interview all the soldiers. And I remember at the time I felt young until I looked at them. I mean, they were babies, 18 years old. And it was so eye-opening and fascinating to see what the military was able to, what they put together logistically. And it was scary at times. There were, the sirens were going off all the time. Thankfully, the missiles never came very close to us except for one night we were feeding our story back. Our live shots were at 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. Kuwaiti time. And all of a sudden, I put the tape in the machine, and the window in front of me bulged in, and we hit the ground, and there was a missile that hit a shopping mall that was, maybe a mile away. That was, that was the only close call that we had, thankfully.
Where in Iraq was that? Yeah. Was that Basra? Or
No, we were in Kuwait.
You were in Kuwait at the time.
Right,
okay.
They were...
But you actually at one point drove to the Iraqi border.
Yes, we would drive up there, as far as we could get, and you'd be driving down the highway and you'd look over and there'd be an 18-wheeler with, Patriot missiles with, the U.S. flag on them and the numbers driving by you.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, it was
incredible.
It was quite an experience. I was grateful to go. I'm not sure I would do it again now that I have kids. This was pre-kids. But it was an amazing experience.
Is that one of the most memorable story you've ever covered?
I think it has to be immersing yourself in a totally different culture, and that was the first big foreign story I'd ever covered. To be amongst all of these foreign journalists who were there, I mean, ABC News, Peter Jennings was there. It was just it was on a different level that I had never seen.
It's like a pinch yourself moment.
Were you with the civilians at all?
Yes,
mingle with them and.
We did. We had a fixer and a driver, and so they became our, you know, contact points because they knew where to take us, what was safe. You know, every time you went into the hotel, you had to be wanded and put all of your bags through security. We met, you know, local military folks.
It's almost like a surreal experience.
It was. You know, it was kind of like an out-of-body experience. I think when I got back, it took me a few weeks to kind of get back into...
To readjust.
Wow. It was an amazing experience. And Chuck is such a veteran. He had covered other wars before, so he kind of knew the drill. And so I was fortunate to be with somebody who... you know, knew what he was doing, was a consummate professional, and, you know, I learned so much in those 6 weeks.
That's incredible. All right, Mary and John, I have to ask you guys, most memorable stories that you ever remember covering. It could be something many years ago, something recent, just something that you worked on and was very important to you, very passionate.
The most enjoyable story that I ever covered, I did a documentary for the Tribune, which ran on SEAL TV and WGN back in 2004, called The City's Pastime. And it's on a subject that's close to your heart, Chicago baseball.
Yes.
The history of Chicago baseball, looking at the history of the Sox and the history of the Cubs and the history of the Negro Leagues, because Chicago was the center for the Negro Leagues. The East-West All-Star Game was held at Comiskey Park every year for 25 years. So it was probably the most pleasurable part of that assignment or that documentary was getting a chance to talk to a guy named Buck O'Neill, who was a longtime scout for the Cubs. He's the guy who scouted Ernie Banks and Billy Williams and Lee Smith, every great African-American Cubs player from the 50s on to the 80s. And it was just a joy to be able to talk to him about his history, both with the Cubs and before that with the Negro Leagues, mm-hmm. because he was a Negro Leagues manager for 20-odd years.
When he was scouting the greats and the players that you're talking about, we know them as legends. But back then, did he encounter some resistance by saying, hey, you know, hey, check out not so much Lee Smith, but the Billy Williams or, you know, say the Ernie Banks, you know, the legendary African-American players from the past? Was there resistance back then because of the color of their skin?
You know, I don't think there was a lot of resistance by the time, you know, Ernie Banks came around, because a lot, you know, six or seven teams by that time had black players. So
think of that, six or seven.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And yeah.
But he
began. Be all, but you're right.
But I mean, he told stories about being a coach for the Cubs, because he was a coach in the early 60s when they had what was called a College of Coaches, where they rotated people to be manager. And he was supposed to be in line to manage the team, but they always avoided his spot, so he never got a chance to manage the team.
Wow.
So he was bitter about that. He was a little bitter about that.
Yeah.
But the overall project was just so enjoyable, getting a chance to talk to folks like Ron Santo, people you knew.
Oh, yeah.
And Ernie Banks, about their long history here in Chicago. So that I think that was the most enjoyable project.
And those stories are just so, I mean, the stories that they tell off the air and, you know, not on the microphone,
mm-hmm. each other,
those moments that you capture, those are the special ones.
Yeah, they are. They really are.
Very cool. All right, Mary.
Well, I'll have to go with a news story when I was in Madison when, actually, it was a terrible day. It was the Challenger, when the Challenger exploded in 86. And I was the afternoon news anchor at the time at this Magic 98, the radio station. And, you know, I was fairly young, but that time we just had, you know, the wires. That's all we had.
Sure.
Coming out, AP, that was it. And we
the
had
dot
no,
matrix. That
yeah, we had no information at all. You know, it was coming off, and it came. And the seasoned veteran morning guy is like, he like ditched. He just said, hey, we're going live, and you're it. And I'm like, whoa. And so I was just thrown behind the mic for 6 hours. Pretty much by myself, me and the disc jockey at the time, and he was like, well, we got to go to news. And, you know, no information was coming. I mean, we knew about Krista McAuliffe and who was on the flight, but that was it. And it's, you know, everything came across the wire. It was so slow. And we just started throwing man on the street, go out, interview people. Well, nobody even knew what happened.
Oh,
so,
sure.
You know how that
sure.
was. You would go do a man on the street. It's like, well, yeah, did you hear about the
oh,
Challenger
yeah.
explosion? No. And then you have to tell them and then
be the bearer of
so
bad
it
news.
So yeah. it was the hardest 6 hours of my life.
And it's constant, right, Mary?
Yeah,
I mean, you can't stop.
I couldn't leave. I couldn't get up. There were a couple commercials because we had to go live because it was the news and they couldn't play music. It was terrible to play music. So, yeah, it was a long, long day.
Yeah. And it was 86. And what an emotional story to be on the air for. You know, it's not like politics or something, you know, an election, you know, it's not.
School teacher.
Yes.
And, you know, so sad. I think I went home and I just bawled. And it was horrible.
Awful. You know. Is it? That's an occurrence. I mean, there's so many in our lives. 9/11.
Yeah, 9/11.
Challenger,
another one,
Princess
but,
Diana.
Yeah.
You think of where you were. And I would probably hazard to guess all of these major stories, most of us were in newsrooms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially with the 9/11.
Princess Diana. Oh, 9/11,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Mm-hmm. They asked me at the Walk of Fame a few weeks ago the most memorable story. And then probably because we just celebrated the 18th anniversary, but it was just fresh in my head that was such a devastating day and a day that will resonate with everybody, but especially journalists because we were living it and reporting it. You know, it was just one of those emotional nonstop days.
Every minute counted on that day.
Yeah.
And I just remember I worked later at the Tribune. I would come in at 2:00. And I remember coming in, I'd ride my bike in.
Yeah.
And I remember riding my bike in downtown, and it looked like a nuclear bomb had hit the city. There was no one around.
I know. It was an awful day. We're talking with John Owens, Barb Markoff, and Mary Vandeveld. It's Andrea and the reporters back with more conversation and more stories that they've chased. These are fascinating. You want to stick with us. Thank you, David Jennings. The 7:35 right now. It's Andrea and the reporters. John Owens, Barb Markoff, and Mary Vandeveld are my guests tonight on the program. And we were talking about notable stories, most memorable stories. And Mary, I know you said, I know we have to go to news, but I really have to mention this, that the most important thing about my career so far is...
Well, I didn't say about my career.
I know. I'm making sure you can go home tonight.
Yeah, I can
and
go home tonight.
And the door won't be
even
locked.
Even though my husband's out of town, which is a good thing. But he's still listening. But yes, at my first job in northern Wisconsin, like I mentioned, at WBWA, I met my husband.
Oh,
so, but of course, I dated two other guys there first.
Oh.
And then he finally asked me out. There were only men there. There was one other girl, and he was dating her, and she was the receptionist.
Oh, my
yes,
gosh.
Belinda
wow.
in the leather jacket. But we won't get into
that. Oh, hello.
So,
hello.
Yeah. So, anyway.
And how many... And how long have you been married? 30?
Almost 35 years.
Aww.
Yes.
Three kids, two grandchildren. Very nice. Very nice.
Hi, Steve. Love you.
We love you, Steve. All right. I have to ask each of you, your days are so different. I know some of you work you're up at 2 a.m. Others of you work until midnight. Mary, that's going to be you tonight, by the way. Others work a little bit more of a normal shift, but just not doing what an everyday reporter might do. So I want you each to walk me through like what a typical day would be. Barb, I'm going to start with you because I just always thought this was so cool. You work on the I team with Chuck Gowdy. What's a typical day like for you? I mean, do you get people just randomly stopping you and saying, okay, I got a story. Like a doctor, you know, at a party, they'll always say, oh, can you just look at this? Is this, you know?
Where we get some of our best stories.
Do you?
Yes, because people know that, at least I hope, they know they can trust me. And so some of the best stories that we've done come from, you know, sources, people that you know in the city that you either grew up with, went to college with, who are now in positions where they're seeing wrongdoing.
Right.
And so, you know, we've had many, many stories brought to us that way. And I'm always happy to listen. I mean, sometimes that's why I go meet friends for coffee. That's where you hear stories about things that are going on that shouldn't be.
Right.
A typical day, I mean, my hours are very unusually good for news. I usually work, you know, 9 to 6, but, you know, I'm up in the morning checking the news. Chuck has already emailed us numerous, you know, story ideas. And, you know, if a source calls in the middle of the night or on the weekend, of course, I'm answering those calls. So, you know, you're always kind of on call.
Right.
But there's a morning meeting at 9 a.m. that, you know, some of us go to. We make sure there's always somebody there from the I team. And then we kind of just get going on our day. I've always got a couple projects that I'm working on, long-term investigations. But then we do a 6:00, you know, kind of quick investigation every day. So our days are busy. You know, we're running out getting interviews, kind of looking ahead at what's going on for the rest of the week, trying to plant out, you know, when we can actually get our investigations on. I work on a team with two other producers and then Chuck and a photographer and an editor. So, you know, we've got the luxury of having a really nice sized team and management who, you know, supports us and kind of lets us do what we're good at.
You guys have a great team. You're so respected in the industry for what you do. We thank you for that because, you know, there's a lot of reporters and producers who wouldn't go to the lengths that you do to be accurate and to make sure that, you know, all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed. So I know I speak for many in Chicago who think that.
Thank you.
But I think it's just very cool. A story that you follow could take a day or it could take months. It just depends on what the topic is.
Yeah, I mean, we've had stories that, you know, you work on for a year until it's ready to go. And I would say, you know, most recently there was a story that we covered for a couple of years, a serial rapist who owned a tanning salon in the West Loop. And the amount of hours that we put into investigating and, you know, surveilling him and getting court documents and getting women to trust us to tell their story, it took hours and hours and days and months. And, you know, he was convicted and is spending the next 8 years of his life in jail. Wow. And it was a draining story emotionally because we would go to every court hearing, you know.
Talk to the victims, yeah.
Talk to the victims. Huge. And then, you know, it's also an odd situation when the person knows who you are. You know, it was uncomfortable. Yeah. Like, he would give me dirty looks in court, and I would have to, you know, go up to his attorney and let him know. And, you know, you have a connection with these people, whether you like it or not, because you're covering them for, you know, years.
Right.
And so that was a story that, again, our management allowed us to follow from beginning to end, and was really gratifying when justice was served.
Yeah, it's a team effort. Great job. Mary, typical day for you.
Oh.
I know you're up at what, 2 or 3?
3:30. I get up. I'm here by 4:30. Just start checking the traffic and getting all the commercials together for the day. There's a lot of that involved now, it seems like. We read a lot of commercials because traffic is sponsored. Traffic Central is sponsored. It's, you know, a lot of sponsoring of everything. So got to get that all organized. And checking my maps, checking all the information, start doing traffic at 5, and I'm part of the morning show with Steve Cochran's morning show.
I've heard of him.
Yes. Remember him?
I do.
Yes. We used to have so much fun.
Oh, we did. We worked together 20. Marianne, you and I started at GN the same year. You were a couple months ahead of me.
Yep,
but we
I
both
was
started
6 months ahead of
in
you.
In 97, yeah. Oh, God.
I know.
We were just such spring chickens.
Worked on a lot of shows together.
We did. You were in news for a while here.
I was in news for a while. Kind of, you
still
know,
do
then
some news?
Well, when we moved over here, we had different adjustments we had to make. So
I
had to do more traffic and work till noon doing traffic. So, you know, but traffic has changed so much, and I'm sure that we're going to get into that later, but from the way we do it now on the computer, you know, we used to have the huge traffic map at the old WGN.
Oh, sure, on the first floor there.
That
yeah.
was the coolest thing ever, and it lit up, and the roads would red flashlights when it was busy, and then yellow and green when it was clear. And so I had to, excuse me, virtually look up to see which
what was lit. Yeah, what
and
was
I did? I had a crick in my neck the entire day because it was like, okay, I'm the Eisenhower. Let me see.
And it's and so much of what you do. You don't, and I'm not just saying this because we're friends. It's just you don't realize how good you are until you hear other people trying to do traffic, and you do it so succinctly and so clearly. And you don't just your work day doesn't stop here at WGN. You leave here, and people hear you elsewhere too because you're a very successful voiceover artist too.
Yes, I do voiceovers on the side. A lot of I have my own little studio at home, so I can do some corporate videos, e-learning, how-tos, you know, commercial stuff too. So, yeah, it's fun. That's like my fun part. That's what I like to do.
You do it clearly.
Traffic's just, you know, traffic. You do traffic for so long.
You got the voice for it, Mary. I think you're going to be very successful in this business.
VDVvoice.com. Check it out.
VDVvoice.com. John Owens, typical day for you. Now, you work on two very cool shows.
Right.
You work with Decades with Bill.
Right. So I work for Weigel Productions, which they're the parent company for CW26, WCIU. But I primarily work on shows for the Decades Network. The one show I work on is Through the Decades with Bill Curtis, which is a daily almanac show. It's a look at events in history as it happened on a specific day, utilizing some fascinating old CBS footage from the 50s all the way up to, you know, the mid-21st century, maybe 2005, 2006. I think the latest story we've done is like 2013. And, you know, I have, compared to Barb and Mary, banker's hours. I work from 9 to 5, doing the, you know, occasional interview either in studio or on location for that show. And then also I work on another show for MeTV, which runs on Sundays at 9 p.m., called Collector's Call.
Collector's Call. Lisa, and Ro Khan just did a show with you.
Was an appraiser on a show that will air in 2020, in spring 2020. He was an appraiser for some James Bond memorabilia. Okay. So the premise of the show is we visit a collector each week who shows off his or her collection, and we have an appraiser come in and appraise the, you know, 7 or 8 most interesting items, and then they offer a trade at the end.
John, you need to come to my basement because I have so much stuff.
I'll bet you do. I'll bet
you're going to
you
be
do.
A guest on the next show.
What
does it have to be specific? Like, you know, Elton Jim, who fills in here, is a big Elton John.
He's
fan.
Done our show.
Has he really?
Yeah.
Does it have to be? Oh my God, I have so much 80s stuff. I have like Bangles albums.
Yeah,
I have concert T-shirts.
Hmm. What about Bill Leff? He's into toys.
Bill Leff. He's going to be in season 3 as well.
That's cool. And how many? Is this season 3 or 4 for you guys?
I'm sorry. Season 2 is coming up. Season 1 we just ended. Season 2, Bill Leff is going to be in season 2.
We just extended you.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
So we have to get all the GM personality.
Absolutely, we do. It's John Owens, Barb Markoff, and Mary Vanneveld on Andrea and the Reporters. Quick break and back after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back to Andrea and the Reporters. Our guest tonight, John Owens. He works on Through the Decades with Bill Curtis and 1968 on the Decades Network and Collector's Call on MeTV. Barb Markoff, an investigative producer and reporter at ABC7 with Chuck Gowdy on the I-Team. And Mary Vanneveld, you hear her every morning here on 720 WGN on the Steve Cochran Show and throughout our midday newscasts. Thank you guys for being here. This is fun. Thanks. It always goes so quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I love hearing your stories. I have to ask each of you a story that you've covered that you wish you don't. Why do you give me a weird look? Mary.
Because I've done traffic for so long. I'm like, when
did
I cover a story?
You got to go back, and I can think of one for you.
Except semis that tip over all the time. I mean, come on.
Right? How many? Well, what was the most unique product that ever came out of a semi that tipped over?
A bunch of pigs.
Okay. There's so many puns that we could make here, but we're not going to go there.
That's okay.
How do these tip over? Okay, this is a legit question. How do these semis tip
jackknife?
Over?
Jackknife.
Well, they going too fast?
Well, yeah, and they're trying to make turns up a ramp or whatever, an overpass, and they just they're going too fast. Spill their load, jackknife, and down they go.
All right, so I'll come to you last, but a story that you each have covered that you wish you could go back and cover, either because you liked it so much, it was so exciting, or you would have done it a little differently this time around. John, what do you think?
I would go with, I worked on a project with the Tribune's photo department in 2013 called Chicago Under the Gun, and it turned out to be a half an hour documentary for online for chicagotribune.com, where we would visit the families of people who had been killed. We revisited families, about 8 families or 9 families of people who were killed during that year. I think there were about 600 homicides that year. And, you know, I think I'd like to do it over again and do it something that was more in depth with the families. I think we just scratched the surface with the families that we visited.
Yeah.
So I think that would be the one story that I'd like to cover again.
It's so hard though when you work on deadline.
I know.
You know, to really do justice to every single story. It's just you know, the timing makes it difficult.
It really does.
So that would be one that you would want to go back and revisit, possibly.
And do it, and do something more in-depth.
Yeah.
Something that's not a half an hour, something that's more like an hour or two hours.
Love documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
They're very fun. All right, Barb, how about you? Story that you'd either, whether you want to go back and revisit because you liked it so much or you would have done it differently.
So we were covering Governor Blagojevich. He was going to California to go to his chief of staff's wedding, and we had heard that he was going to have all of these state police cars driven from Chicago to Napa, you know, to be his security detail for the wedding. And so we went out there. I went with a photographer. We were in, you know, a Ford Explorer surveilling him for days. The security detail never noticed us, never came up to the car.
Oh,
I mean, there were like 15 of them. Never came up to the car to ask what we were doing. They were in a quaint little neighborhood in Sonoma. We were parked right across the street. I mean, we have great video of him doing his hair in the rear view mirror.
Right.
And, you know, then they were weaving in and out of traffic, blowing red lights. I mean, it was just out of control. Nobody knew who he was there. So we couldn't understand why he had to have this big security detail. And so I had just gotten back from maternity leave. So it was kind of a crazy time. I was away from my daughter for the first time. But I wish I would have maybe taken some more risks to get better video, because at the time we were just so nervous about being discovered. And now looking back, you just realize after doing so much surveillance work, nobody ever notices you, and they're not suspecting me.
They don't know
who I am.
No.
So that's we had a lot of fun on that story, but I know we could have gotten more.
Oh, that's funny. I'd love to see your video, though. I mean, I'm sure it's better than you think.
When was this? What year was it?
Oh, gosh. It was 2004.
Uh-huh.
And he used to... Okay, and now it's known. I mean, obviously, Blagojevich has been a story in this for decades in this state and this city. He used to carry the hairbrush around. That was... And he had a name for it, too.
The football.
The football.
He
called the hairbrush the football. Like, pass the football, and he'd start quaffing.
Yes,
you know?
He loves his hair.
Oh, that's funny. All right, Mayor, story that you covered that you want to go back and revisit.
I can't think of any particular stories, but just distant, you know, issues where I was by myself in the newsroom and you couldn't do much because you couldn't do investigative stuff. Like, I was in the Quad Cities. I was the only news person there at a rock station.
Right.
All I could do was rip and read.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just, and the community there was so diverse and interesting in the Quad Cities, and I really wanted to get out there and cover some stuff, but we had no staff. We had nobody except me. So, you know, it ended up where, you know, the news director ended up with drug problems.
Oh, no.
It was just a disaster. And he got, not the news director, the program manager.
Okay,
you
right.
know, he was gone, the program director.
Oh, well, there
director,
you go. Yeah.
And then I'm like, this station is out of control. I'm getting out of here. That's right. When I came to Chicago.
It was time.
So I think it was small stations, understaffed, wanting to cover more things, trying to set up correspondence and not being able to, and that kind of thing.
Okay, we've talked about rip and read. We've talked about the ticker tape, the dot matrix. So how... We know technology today is so much easier. I mean, everything you can do with your phone. And I was asked this question over the weekend at the INBA convention. Some students, we did a panel, and some students were just asking, how has journalism changed since you started? And I mean, I know the obvious answer would be social media, technology, phones, everything like that. But what has been the greatest change in the way that you're able to do your job? Better, for better or for worse? I mean, is social media good or bad? Does it help or hinder us in our respective positions in our field?
I think for us, it's helped us a ton. I mean, people put a lot of information on social media, and we find out all sorts of things that, you know, in hindsight, people I'm sure would have, you know, wished we didn't know.
Sure.
But at the same time, I cover a lot of federal court cases, and we are now expected to tweet out the information immediately, and making sure that you've got it exactly accurate. And, you know, you want to be first, but you want to be accurate. That for me has been the most challenging, because I'm, you know, such a stickler for making sure my information is correct and everything is spelled correctly. I mean, and, you know, the younger folks are much better and quicker at it. But that has been the biggest impact for me, I think, is that when we're covering a trial or a hearing, you know, they want us to push it out first and fast and, you know, make sure that it's completely accurate. And sometimes, you know, these cases are really confusing. And so you don't even have anybody that you can confer with and make sure that you have the information correct. So,
right.
You know, the Dennis Hastert case, you know, Blagojevich wasn't as much because we weren't tweeting live from the courtroom.
Right.
But,
and George Ryan, too. I mean, yeah. There wasn't anything back then.
No. Either. So that for us, I think, has been kind of the biggest impact is that you have to be quick and accurate. But on the flip side, it's helped us a ton because, you know, we are able to get a ton of information quickly now.
Quickly,
where it used to take us a long time.
Right. And, John, you've been a multimedia journalist I know you've gone from video cassettes to high eight to, I mean, digital.
That's right. Tape-to-tape editing was a common practice, like, only 15 years ago or less. And now, you know, it's so easy to edit video. You can shoot 4K video on your iPhone just in the last 10 years ago with things like YouTube. There's so many ways to locate archival video via YouTube or archive.org. Research in general is just so much easier now, now that you have so many documents available to you online through, you know, newspapers.com, you know, getting access to all the old newspapers that way. The Library of Congress is online now. So research is just so much easier now. Just within the last 10 years alone, things are so much easier because of the technology.
It absolutely is true. This has been so much fun, you guys. I really appreciate it. I want to know where we can find all of you and what is next for all of you, whether it's another documentary, a book, stories that you're still following. Where can we find you and what's next for you, John?
I'm working on a project for the Decades Network on the golden era of comedy, so silent comedians like Chaplin and Keaton, silent comedians like the Marx Brothers and Jack Benny, and early television comedians like Jackie Gleason. So that's for the spring of 2020. So that's the project I'm working on now, along with Collector's Call.
On MeTV. On Sundays.
Sundays at 9 p.m.
Very good. And I'll wait for my call. For Collector's Call, how's that?
And in the meantime, GN listeners can look for Bill Leff and Rokan.
Yeah, very good. They're coming up on season two.
Yep.
Barb Markoff.
I can't really tell you what I'm working on.
I was gonna ask you that early on, like what's the big story? But you can't do the big reveal. Is there a reveal coming? Is there like a big story that
we should be watching? We're always kind of, you know, looking for the next big story. I would say, you know, over the past year, I've done a lot of stories on human trafficking, sex trafficking, and that has been really eye-opening because I think people don't think that happens here, and it happens a lot.
Right.
And so we've been following through on stories surrounding that topic.
Very good. And you're on social media as well?
Yes.
Facebook,
at
Instagram?
Barb Markoff, ABC7.
Okay, John, you too?
John_P_Owens on Twitter.
Very good. Mary Vandeveld.
Well, you know where I am.
You every morning. But,
I'm on Steve Cochran's show.
And you got your successful voiceover business, too?
Yes, I'm VDVvoice.com, and I just started working on some audiobooks. So that's kind of a fun thing that I'd like to delve into.
Adult or children?
Learning stuff, children, you know, medical, a lot of medical stuff. Boring.
Very nice.
Boring stuff.
No, it's
no,
not.
Not nonfiction.
No,
I can't do a character.
Voices. Listen to her. Listen to her. Listen
yes,
for her. And hire her, too.
Yes.
Mary Vandeveld, Barb Markoff, John Owens, thank you guys so much. It's Andrea and the Reporters right here on 720 WGN. Podcast will be up later tonight. Thank you guys very much.
Thanks
thank
for
you.
Having us.
Thanks for having us.
Have a great night. Extension 720 with Justin Kaufman is next.